Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, author of the week. Today we have Rachel Abbott, author of And So It Begins, and as we will discuss, various other psychological thrillers. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Rachel.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
So we're here talking about And So It Begins, which is not your first novel.
No.
I do want people to get right to this one. So let's give them a little idea of the story and we can talk a bit about it.
Okay, well, in common really with most of my books, it's quite difficult to talk about And So It Begins without giving the game away. So basically it's, I suppose it's all framed around where does any murder begin? Is it at the moment the knife is raised to strike? Or before that, at the first thought of violence? There are so many possible beginnings to murder. And So It Begins, it actually starts with a murder. Sergeant Stephanie King arrives at a beautiful clifftop house to discover two bodies entwined on a bed, covered in blood, but only one of them is dead. And we don't find out at the start which of them it is. So what brought them to this? The book moves back in time to where it seems it all began. But when one person stands trial, the jury and the reader are forced to ask the question, is there ever a proper defence to murder?
Mm-hmm. And from the get-go, there are seeds of doubt sown in our minds. Stephanie King, who you mentioned, is the sergeant who goes to the house, gets called to the house, and finds the body or bodies. Doesn't pass the smell test from the beginning. And then, as soon as we meet the second character, we know something's up. Something's wrong. We meet her partner. Not quite right. We meet the partner's sister. Ooh, not right. From the beginning, you keep us on our toes and guessing, and for me, it was literally all the way through to the final page.
Well, that's great news.
You had me fooled.
That's really good news.
And every time, because you turn it on, literally, the tap is turned on from the beginning and literally does not stop.
Well, that was the plan, but I'm very glad to hear that it worked.
Yes. Okay, so what is it about murder that just captivates you so much?
Well, strangely, it's not murder that captivates me. It's actually people's minds. It's the strangeness of people's minds and the things that people will do, the things that people are driven to, and how everybody is different. One of the things that people sometimes say to me when they write a review about one of my books, they sometimes say, yes, but nobody would do that. And I want to know who this nobody is, because you only have to look around you to see the bizarre things that people do. You get women writing to serial killers because they want to be in love with them and they want to marry them. So there is, to me, there doesn't seem to be a barrier, and people will do the strangest things. And so it's actually the psychology of it that is the thing that gets me. If a dead body gets thrown into the mix, then that's all part of the story.
And does that help as a writer to explore? I mean, do you explore what you might do? Or are you only exploring what they might do?
A bit of both, really, and that's quite a good question, because I like to give people dilemmas. From the very first book that I wrote, I liked the idea of putting what are basically good people into very difficult situations where they have to make a decision. And sometimes those decisions can be basically against the law. Is that a good thing to do? Is that a bad thing to do? Are they in such a situation that they have no way out? And so I like to give them dilemmas, and to some extent I start off by thinking what I would do, but as I begin to write about a person, that person takes over, and then I really do feel what they might do in those circumstances.
And do you think murder is justifiable in any or all? Or
I'm not sure I should answer that.
Sure you should.
I think there are circumstances in which I can understand it. I can understand why somebody would have committed murder. I mean, the whole of this book came about because I visited a women's prison.
Oh, right.
And some of the women who I was talking to in that prison, I later discovered, were lifers. So for them to be locked up for life, there was a fair chance that they had committed murder. And it was just bizarre because they looked like you and me. They looked like somebody... Some of them did look as if they'd had a very hard life, you know, and that was really sad. But some of them looked like you or I. They looked like somebody we might go to the pub with. Mm. And yet something had driven them to do this.
Yes.
And I think women are very rarely cold-blooded murderers. It's usually because they don't think they've got any choice. But then I would say that because I'm a woman.
Quite reactionary. Yes. Reactionary murders.
Yes.
But it is difficult. Like I have to say, being an American, I am glad that I never had a gun, because I know my temper is such that if I had a gun, I probably use it at certain points in my life. And that does frighten me. And I am grateful that, to date anyway, I have not been put in a situation where that kind of downward pressure bore down on me to the point where I felt murder was a good idea.
Mm. Yeah, no, I understand that. And I think it's, in some of my stories, it's debatable whether murder is the right idea. But in some of them, I think it's not that it's justifiable. I'm not saying that there's ever justification. But I think certain circumstances, I can understand why my characters suddenly decide, they decide, not me, you understand, that it's the only solution.
Yeah. Can we talk about your writing in general? Because you have written how many novels now?
I've written 7 in the Tom Douglas series. I've just finished the 8th, actually, but that's not out until February. And this is the first of the Stephanie King series. So a new policeman in a new part of the country. So my Tom Douglas books are all based in Manchester, which that's not quite true, actually. The first one was based in London and Oxfordshire, because I lived in Oxford for quite a while. And then from then on, they're pretty much all in the Northwest, which you can probably tell from my accent is where I'm from. But when I came to come up with the idea for And So It Begins, there was no way it would work in Manchester. You've read it. That would not have worked in Manchester, would it, really? And so I just thought, well, Cornwall, it has to be Cornwall. So it's really good to be able to write about two different parts of the country.
Mm. Yes, because what you're alluding to in And So It Begins is that there's a very dramatic landscape and house, which is almost a character in itself.
Yes.
It is. Talk to me about the use of that. I haven't read your other stories and how you use place there, but talk to me about, you know, what that drama lent you.
So in my other books, the actual locations have been really important, but they're all basically places in Manchester that are have been there all my life and I didn't know anything about them. Places like an area called Pomona Island, which is a patch of wasteland very close to the centre of Manchester, a huge area that the canals run through, which will give you a clue as to what might have happened. Then there are bridges under canals and there are tunnels underneath the city and stuff like that. So they're all kind of dark. But when I started to write this book, when I started to write And So It Begins, I was thinking about if I could put a house... I live right on the sea, by the way. My house is surrounded on three sides by the sea. So if I could put a house anywhere I wanted in Cornwall, it would hang off a cliff and it would have floor-to-ceiling windows and you would just look out over the sea all of the time, which is pretty much what I do, except my house is a Victorian fort, not a brand-new spanking thing on the side of a cliff. And it was just the drama of the whole place seemed... Location, to me, is so important. Even when one of the bits I enjoyed writing most about the book is when she goes into the photographic studio and there are the bits of jewellery that are hung onto all kinds of weird things like an earring through a pig's nose and a silver necklace dangling off a finger. And they're not real fingers, you understand. They're made of bronze, I think, if I remember rightly. But it's the whole idea of creating a scene that people can recognise.
Mm. And also it has that aspect of a glass house, you know, through which one's not supposed to be throwing stones.
No, absolutely.
and dramatic scene and yet isolated.
Yes.
And these characters push each other and are put in very extreme, isolating situations.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing, and I don't know where it was, it might have been on some television program, it was probably in the States, actually. I remember seeing a wall. You went up a drive, and all that was in front of you was a solid wall, painted white, with a door in it. And I remember thinking, what would happen when you walked through that door? And that's what I wanted to try to represent. You walk through the door and wow, in front of you is the wild sea bashing onto the cliffs below. And there's nothing I like better than a wild sea.
And a bit of pressure.
A bit, absolutely.
A little cliffhanger, yeah. Literally.
Literally, yes.
Literally. Okay, so how did you start writing? And why?
That's a very good question. I used to run a company. So I used to run an interactive media company. It started off as a software company, but as websites developed and so on, we moved on to that. And in 2000, I sold the business and effectively retired to go and live in Italy, because I'd always wanted to live in Italy. And it's a wonderful place and I really love it. We've still got property there.
Where in Italy?
In Limache, which is on the east, on the Adriatic side. In fact, there's a programme on the television at the moment about a chef who's travelling all the way down the east coast of Italy, and he goes very close to where we live. So so we lived there for quite a while, but I'm not a natural housewife. And I was bored, basically. And I'd said for years I'd quite fancy writing a book, but when I ran my business, of course, I didn't have time. So we've been living there for a while, and we got snowed in spite of it being Italy. When it snows, it really snows. So we snowed in, and I said to my husband, you know, I'm just going to go in there and I'm going to start to write this book. If you never start it, you're never going to finish it. And I was hooked. He said he didn't see me for 6 weeks because I just used to come out and grab some chocolate biscuits, good idea, and a cup of coffee and go back again. And because I'd had the idea in my head for so long, I used to drive to work plotting murders, basically.
So staff beware.
Yes. I'd more or less got the idea of the book in my head, and I wrote the first draft. It was a long time after that before anything happened to it, because it needed a lot more work. But I got it down. I got the basic idea down, and then I could start to work on it. And I just enjoyed it so much.
Was it a very different experience from reading? And are you an avid reader?
I am an avid reader, really an avid reader. And it is. I think the best thing to me, a good book to me, paints the pictures we were talking about, paints the picture of the location, paints the picture of the characters. And so basically what I was doing was I was reading in my head what I would like to read and then putting it down on paper. So it was a very different experience, but it was very satisfying and I loved it. So when I'd finished the first one, I didn't do anything with it. I just thought, well, that was good fun, I'll write another one now. And I didn't really think about going down the traditional publishing route because I wasn't very young, and I knew that it could take a long time. You've got to get an agent and then the agent's got to find you a publisher. And I thought this could be months and months, and I'll be too old by the time that's finished. So
I'm already retired. Come on.
Yeah, well, I did retire when I was 48, so I suppose. So I just decided that I wasn't going to do anything. And then my stepchildren came over for summer holiday, and they all read it, and they were talking about it all over dinner. They were saying, "Who do you think did this? And what do you think?" And I was like, "Oh, they're actually enjoying it." So I was.
Well, thank you for reading it, yeah. But actually, yeah. I thought you were just being polite, but they seem to be jazzed
They
by
seem
it.
To be yeah. really interested in it, and they weren't big readers at the time. I think they're more so now, but they weren't big readers then. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to just see what I can do with this. And so I saw that you could upload to the Kindle, and I literally said to my husband one day, do you know, I think I'll just give this a go. And I uploaded it to the Kindle, and the rest is history, really. It did so well.
Every single one of your books has been a bestseller on Kindle.
Yes.
Every single one.
Yes.
Were you floored by that?
Completely. Well, to start off with, like anybody who publishes a book on Kindle, unless it's very different now because there's so much advice out there, but there really wasn't then. And so I put it up there, and I then emailed everybody I knew and said, will you buy my book and I'll give you the money back? You know, you don't need to, I'll give you the money back. And most of them didn't have Kindles, but they bought it anyway. And so I kind of got a little bit of a head of steam, but I can remember Christmas Day 2011 getting very excited because six people had bought my book, and I was delirious. And then I thought, this is really pathetic. I used to run a company. Why haven't I got a marketing plan? Why haven't I done the basics? So I came back after Christmas and I wrote a 27-page marketing plan. And you
directed
know,
at whom?
Well, the first thing was identify my audience. So identify my audience, work out how to get to them, set myself a number of objectives, make them smart objectives so they were completed within a certain time scale and they were measurable, I knew what I was supposed to achieve. And it gave me focus, and it took 6 weeks after that to get to number one on Amazon.
Wow.
And it stayed there for 4 weeks, so it was miraculous. The only sad thing about it was we were sitting watching it all the time as it climbed up and climbed up. And I went into the office at about just before midnight, and I came racing back into the sitting room to tell my husband it was number one, and he was asleep. Talk about an anticlimax.
More suspense in your books. Yeah. You know, for crying out loud. And are you, do you mainly read books on Kindle?
No, I like both, actually. Mm. I love hardbacks. So I'm thrilled that And So It Begins is out in hardback. I really love hardbacks. But
well, and you had resisted, you had been approached, but you have resisted until now, sort of traditional publishing model. You're continuing to do both. But what was it about Wildfire that caught your imagination?
So I think Kate Stevenson, who was my editor, she's on maternity leave at the moment, but hopefully due back in not too distant future. Kate had actually spoken to my agent and said that she was quite interested. And although the books that I had been writing, they're all based around a character called Tom Douglas, who's the policeman. They're not police procedurals, but if you're having dead bodies, you kind of need a policeman, really.
You need someone to clean up.
Absolutely. And so it felt as if I didn't really want to mess with that, because that was working, and it seemed silly to break something that was... It may not have broken it. It might have made it infinitely better, but, you know, it was working, so I thought...
And it was under your control.
I knew pretty much where I thought we were going with that, so that was fine. But when I came up with the idea for this one, it was so not a Tom Douglas book. And I spoke to my agent, and we talked about it quite a lot. And I said, you know, I would really love to have the opportunity to work with professional publishing company to find out what their approach is and to work with them. And it's been a dream, to be honest. They have really... kept me involved a lot. I wasn't sure whether they would just do everything and they wouldn't bother to let me know, and they've not been like that at all. They've kept me really involved, so it's been a pleasure.
And have they brought you to a whole new audience? Because they have their own built-in audience for their books that they have also done the research.
Yeah, no, they've introduced me to new ways of marketing that I hadn't come across before. The thing about the marketing of books is it changes all the time. And I've kind of reached the point now where I don't really want to spend hours and hours writing and yet another marketing plan with a whole load of new marketing angles to go at. I just want to write books now. So it was great
You're
to do
You're properly retired now.
Well, I wish.
You're just a writer now.
Yes, I know, but my books are quite complicated and they take quite a long time to write, unfortunately. So I would... It was really interesting to get their take on things and to see some of the things that they've done. And yes, there are a lot of people who've commented on this book who've said, I've never read any of your books before, but I'm going to now, which is lovely.
Yes, so you get an audience for your for your old books as well.
Hoping so.
And tell me about the rooftop book club that's going on tonight.
Yes, so Ellie Griffiths and Sabine Durant are both coming along as well. And we're all three of us going to be talking about our books. And their books are terrific. I've read both of them. And so there's wine and stuff. And I think there's probably about 70 people coming along. So, yeah, it should be a good evening.
Has that been another byproduct of the more traditional route? Is that you're meeting other writers? And if that's so, how has that changed your experience as a writer?
Well, that was actually happening anyway to an extent, because one of the things that I did, along with my agent, who gives me lots of advice and has helped me through the whole thing, the whole development of my sort of my writing career, really, we talked some time ago about getting a publicist, because there is a limit to what I can do. And so we took on a publicist to do all that. So she has, in fact, that was who we met earlier in reception. So we've been just talking about the next Tom Douglas book. So there's a publicist here who does everything for this book. But the one that I've been working with on my Tom Douglas books, she has arranged for me to speak at festivals. I do quite a lot of talks in bookshops, and she usually manages to pair me up with another writer. So I've met some of my all-time heroes and heroines. You know, it's amazing, people whose books I've read for years and years and years and loved, and then I'm speaking with them. You know, it's brilliant.
And it also brings you face to face with a lot of your readers, and it must be in terms of a job and in terms of sort of job satisfaction, it's very different, although there is a bottom line, obviously, but the relationship with your readers is very different than the end user of your software product. It is a very different transaction.
Yes.
Because once I download your book or I pick up your book, it's kind of mine as a reader.
Yeah.
You know, you've given me the raw materials, but I'm a participant in this story.
Yes.
And that must be incredibly rewarding and exciting.
It's fascinating. I love speaking to readers, and they're all so enthusiastic, and they're all so smart as well. We quite often, I have a Facebook group with, and a lot of readers are on that, and we run sort of caption competitions and daft things like that, you know. And they're brilliant. They come up with such clever ideas, and they're really good fun. What I find the most amazing is when I ask them a question like, if this was a film, who would play Stephanie King? Who would play Tom Douglas? And the people they come up with are just remarkable. They're obviously, their imaginations have taken them to a different place.
I
thought Idris Elba was going a bit far for Tom Douglas, who has got blonde hair and blue eyes, you know. So very nice, but not quite what I had in mind.
Fantastic. So beyond the Tom Douglas books, will Stephanie King take flight?
I'm hoping so. I'm already partway through the next Stephanie King, also based in Cornwall. In fact, we went on a mission to do a bit of research in Cornwall, because I wanted to know, if a body went in the sea here, where would it actually wash up? So we went.
So what'd you put in? A sneaker or a body?
Well, no, we actually went to speak to the Newlyn lifeguard people, the lifeboat people, and asked them. They were very helpful. And I wanted to visit some of the sites that I was likely to be using to just get a feel for them, because you can see them from pictures, but it's the other things. It's the silence or the sound, or you just absorbing the whole atmosphere of the place.
It's sort of in the same way that you sort of discovered different parts of your Manchester.
Yes.
You know, you have to be there physically.
Absolutely. The new Tom Douglas one I've just written, some of it takes place in a casino. So I persuaded my nephew, it wasn't difficult, I have to tell you, to take me to a casino in Manchester. So my sister and brother-in-law came along for the trip, you know.
You guys had to do yes, research again.
Yeah, I know. In a casino in Manchester, it was tough.
Excellent. Rachel, thank you so much. This has been absolutely brilliant. And
thank
good luck.
You. Thank you very much.
For more fascinating women, please go to www.radiogorgeous.com.